Welcome to Understory, Western Australia's long-running, long view of our environment, this 13th day of October 2021. I'm Elizabeth Poe. A question in August this year from Shane Love to the Minister for Climate Action, Amber Jade Sanderson, about whether the Minister had met with particular groups in her capacity as Minister for Climate Action, revealed that until August the 4th this year, the Minister for Climate Action had not met with the organisation Clean State, nor had she met with the Electric Vehicle Association of WA, nor Regen WA, nor Natural Resource Management Groups, nor the State Soil and Land Conservation Commissioner. In fact, in the 4 months of being Minister for Climate Action, the one climate action group Amber Jade Sanderson has actually identified meeting with was Extinction Rebellion Grandparents Group. But Amber Jade Sanderson, in those same 4 months of being in office as Minister for Climate Action, had met with the Pastoral and Graziers Association, the Chamber of Minerals and Energy, the Chamber of Commerce and Industry, WA, and the Australian Petroleum Production and Exploration Association. As the only Green elected to State Parliament in March, former Mayor of Fremantle, Brad Pettit, hopes to prompt the state government to action. Tomorrow, Brad Pettit will attempt to activate his plan by introducing a climate action bill into the Legislative Council. Adrian Glamorgan is speaking with Brad Pettit.
I'm Brad Pettit. I am a upper house member of the State Parliament for the Greens Party.
Before we go on to your climate bill, you used to be the mayor of Fremantle. What's been the biggest shock or changes for you as you've moved into the upper house?
It is very different. I mean, being the mayor is very tangible in the sense of you make decisions each week and you see those decisions actually play out in your community. I mean, around which footpaths you fund and which parks you upgrade and all those very tangible things. Being a sole member of a political party in the state parliament is very different. Obviously the state parliament's already less tangible in terms of outcomes, much less immediate. My role is much more around trying to influence debate and actually influence the way that the parliament thinks, put pressure on government, keep them accountable, but also hopefully get them thinking and inspired and, or if nothing else, kind of forced into doing things that we believe they should do. I believe they should do, the Greens think they should do.
Well, it's not a normal parliament because for the first time in history, Labor has a majority in the upper house. Never happened before, and a majority in the lower house. So now whatever we get is what the Labor Party is, I assume.
That's right, and they've got large majorities too. So in the upper house is 36 members, 22 of which are Labor. It's a fact, it's the only time a single party has had a majority in both houses. And looking at that, that's got some real challenges and some challenges both for democracy as a whole. How do you actually influence, improve legislation? I think there's an important tension when you've got a contestation of ideas and when there isn't really one of those anymore because it's just one party putting forward its agenda. There's a real danger for under-ambition, which we'll probably talk about a bit in terms of climate, but also a danger for being a bit sloppy and overreaching sometimes as well. There's not many of us in opposition, or I'm a crossbencher, not necessarily opposition, but certainly not many. There's only four of us on the crossbench. But our job is very much to try to, you know, keep a close eye on government and make sure that the things they're putting through aren't overreach, but also making everyone aware the things they're not putting through. I think that's actually just as significant at the moment, is the legislation we're getting is really trivial, is not the right word. I mean, it's important stuff, but it's pretty small. At a time when we're talking about the change that we should be going through as a society, none of that's even coming to the parliament at this stage.
Well, there was a time when the WA parliament was a world leader in regional or provincial climate action back in 2003 with the sustainability strategy. Labor had 8 years in opposition, then 4 years in its first term, didn't really come up with anything that looked like a climate plan. What is it promising at the moment?
Well, there is a climate policy that was launched November 2020, just before the election, so it's pretty recent.
And were you impressed by it?
Underwhelmed was my first response. Look, and I think anyone who looks at that document could see actually it's not a plan, it's not a strategy, it's not even a policy. It's a grab bag of things that government's already doing without much sense of where it's going to go. No targets, no plan, no whole cohesive strategy. It's more of a brochure saying, here's a grab bag of what we're doing across different agencies. And I must say, if I was the new Climate Action Minister, and this is an encouraging thing, we do have a new Minister for Climate Action, Amber Jade Sanderson, who's only been in the job for a few months. If I was her, I'd be looking at rewriting that rather radically.
So what is your plan?
To put before the Parliament a plan, a proper plan, which involves targets. I think the overwhelming international evidence is that if you're serious about the transition to net zero, which we're seeing happening all across the world now, then you need targets. And you especially need targets for this decade. So this is a plan for this decade in which it sets a legislative target where the government would reduce emissions by 50% by 2030. It also sets a renewable energy target to get to 50% renewable energy by 2025 and 90% by 2030.
There are lots of figures all at once.
Sorry, yes.
So let's just take them one by one. The interim emissions target, what do you mean by that?
So the interim emissions target, which is the 50% reduction in emissions by 2030.
That's on carbon.
That's on carbon. And for the whole economy, importantly. That's the minimum that the IPCC and others say we need to do this decade if we're going to have any chance of keeping 1.5 degrees alive. And there is a overwhelming consensus now that a safe climate is a climate that warming is limited to 1.5. There was talk about 2 degrees a few years ago. There is a strong view now that is very, very high risk once you get above that. So there is what we've seen with Paris and the IPCC, the Paris Agreement, and Glasgow coming up, is now we need to actually get actions in place so that everybody can get to 1.5, and those actions have to take place this decade. And a 50% reduction is pretty well what the minimum that everybody needs to do.
What would that mean for Western Australia? What would it look like in practice?
It would be a major change. Maybe some context is useful at this point. WA is the only state in which emissions are going up since 2005. We've seen every other state, except the Northern Territory, which is obviously not a state, bring down its emissions. We've seen some like Tasmania now, which have been carbon neutral for six out of the last 7 years. And we've seen other states like New South Wales just recently talk about the very targets I'm talking about, 50% reduction by 2030. WA has no target and its emissions continue to rise year on year.
Is there a sense amongst politicians that they're waiting till 2049 to get the 2050 targets happening?
Look, and I think that is my real fear. And that is why I've made this bill very clearly about this decade. I think there is a whole bunch of people and certainly I think this is the Scott Morrison view sometimes, is that you just let business as usual happen and you hope that some technology happens between now and 2049 that can rapidly bring down emissions. That does not get us a safe climate. It's about this decade is the vital decade. Every year we don't get emissions down, we're using up our carbon budget to create a safe climate. So what it looks like for WA is a pretty big shift around our emissions and around the kind of things that we do, where business as usual really gets rethought. And I think this is actually the heart of it, is how we've always done things in WA is how we're still doing them. In the face of the climate crisis, nothing is changing. And I think what this bill is aiming to do is say that's got to change if you're serious about the science and if you're serious about actually meeting some of those targets.
So is this where your renewable energy targets come in? Because obviously if you are reducing business as usual, you have to create a new business for the future. What are you talking about with that?
So this is a really good question, because at the heart of, in some ways you could say, if WA was a nation, we would have per capita one of the highest emissions in the world. So we, in many ways, at the moment, the way we're behaving is a bit of a climate criminal, frankly. But we have such an opportunity in this state to go from climate zero to climate hero, in the sense that we a state with huge amounts of wind, huge amounts of sun, and huge amounts of land. We could be a renewable energy superpower, but that requires leadership, it requires investment, and it requires clear targets and direction for business so that they can actually do those things. But there is a huge opportunity for the state to actually do all of these things. But at the moment, there's no direction. And in fact, we're seeing fossil fuel projects, gas projects, expand right at the time when everybody from the IPCC to the International Energy Agency says no more fossil fuel projects.
So you're talking about 50% by the time of the next election, so that it's a target that you can measure?
Yeah. Well, so for the renewable energy, 50% by 2025, which is in the lead up to the next election. We have seen some really great investment in renewable energy, but it's largely been people, individual residents putting it on their roofs. It's not investment by government. In fact, in this last budget, there was no investment by government in large-scale renewables.
Is that part of the brochure plan for climate?
No. In fact, the brochure plan talks a little bit about some community batteries and some other things, but no real plan for renewables. And that's why I put that target in there. Renewable energy is now the cheapest power in the world. It's the cheapest power in history. But WA needs to actually step up and invest in this and give industry certainty around it. I mean, maybe I can give a story from my time as Mayor of Frio, where we proposed a solar farm down on some unusable land down in South Fremantle. That project never got up because there is no target in this state. Therefore, there was no requirement for anyone to buy renewable energy in this state. Therefore, there was no market. So all the approvals in place, Epuron were keen to go and build it. They've spent a huge amount of work, but because there's no renewable energy target in this state, they had no one to sell the power to, and that project has never happened. My point is, by putting these targets in place, you actually create business, you create jobs, you create new projects, and you get a renewable energy mix up, which is still, whilst growing, is still relatively low, sitting in the low 20%.
So you've got a renewable energy generation target of 50%. Does that mean overall of all the energy that's produced?
Yep.
Like in Canberra, where ACT has 100% energy regeneration.
Yep.
You're wanting 50% by 2025 and then 90% by the end of the decade.
That's right, which is very ambitious, and that will require some major things to happen, like coal-fired power stations to close down and those just transition for those workers in Collie. But this is what needs to happen, and you need a plan where you're investing in renewable energy so that you can take those old polluting, and these are really old, some of these coal-fired, take them off the grid and have a grid that, and look, this is modest. This, the Greens actually have a target of 100% renewable energy by 2030. The experts who we put these plan together with were like very pragmatic, saying they expect that technology is not quite there yet. Some small amounts of gas peaking for those days, we might have consecutive days of low wind and low sun, is important. We've tried to be pragmatic here, but 90% by 2030 is totally doable. It just requires leadership and investment now.
You've got me thinking, Brad Pettit, about the way that the psychology, the social psychology of the mining industry is think big, develop the country, develop the north. Why is it that we can't use that same psychology for renewable energy?
Well, I think we can. And in fact, interestingly, I think we're seeing it, but not from government. I mean, I think what we've seen is some of those very same mining magnates, and I think Twiggy Forrest is seeing the huge opportunity here and actually sees that this is the next big play, is how you can do renewable energy mixed with hydrogen as storage, and all of a sudden you literally can be exporting clean, green energy all around the world, which everyone's going to be demanding as they all try to meet their commitments to getting to net zero. So this is an exciting time, and you see people like that who do have vision and know how to make it happen. They're the ones who are, strangely enough, dragging government to the table. But my view is actually this is a place where government needs to be leading as well and can speed it up if it gets in the driver's seat rather than just being dragged to the party, so to speak.
Is there a risk that really what's happening is democracy hasn't been performing somehow? The political system has kept on delivering this under-ambition?
Yeah, the last election was very much, I think, almost a referendum on COVID management. And a lot of those other big issues, I think, really did get pushed to the back. Okay, and elections in WA are always going to be, I mean, in some ways, fought and won on economy and jobs. But the point that I'm trying to make here with this bill is this: the future jobs, The jobs for the next century are in renewable energy, are in green hydrogen, are in actually helping the world transition to net zero. They're not in coal, they're not in gas, and they're probably not even exporting iron ore to China. We actually need to plan for the next decade and the next wave of jobs, and we can, in doing so, can be part of the climate solution. But my frustration at the moment is we're doing none of those things.
Well, you mentioned an independent panel, a climate expert panel. What would its job be?
So its job would be two things. It would be actually making sure that the decisions that government are making are reviewed and are held accountable in terms of carbon budgets, carbon footprint and the like, but also advising government on the opportunities. And also, I think importantly, in this process, as we transition, it's important to have transparency and accountability. Greenwashing will be rife over the next few years, and we need to really make sure that people are properly informed. And having a separate independent council that will write reports, almost like actually saying, this is what government's doing, here's what's working, here's what's not, here's where we're up to, I think holds us all to account and makes us all better.
Would that report to the public or the parliament or just to the premier?
No, it would report... ultimate report to the parliament and will be made public. And that's the most important part. And because what we're trying to do through this process is make sure this is a really transparent kind of process and one that does hold government accountable. And I think when those things happen is when you get, I think it's when you get the energy and the motivation behind it. People can think they can scrimp the numbers and dodge some of those things and then they don't get to the action they need to be doing.
I think Greta Thunberg was talking about creative accounting was the way that most countries were trying to reduce their targets.
Yeah, and that's what we don't need. This is too serious and too real. Putting it bluntly, future generations depend on us not scribbling accounts but doing this properly.
Before we leave this idea of the independent climate expert panel, why can't the EPA do that? Why doesn't it do it already?
Yeah, I mean, the EPA does a lot of things and they are trying, I think, now to at least get future projects to acknowledge the 2050 target and their pathway there. So there is some of that. But I think having an expert climate panel, and I should say when I put together this bill, I did it with exactly that. I'm very interested in climate, but I don't consider myself to be a scientific expert. So I got the best people in WA to help me write this bill, and I realised how important that was, and I think government can only benefit from having the best people in this state advising us on how it's been implemented.
Was there anything about the advice that you got from your working group that maybe shocked you or gave you more hope or greater impetus?
I think for me it was really useful in the sense of, I mean, I'm always wanting to be very ambitious, and I think there was a real sense of let's make this bill doable and defendable, still very ambitious. WA has some particular challenges given the nature of our industries and what we do. And I think it was important to kind of recognise those, delve down into where emissions were coming from, where the easy savings were and how they could be implemented over time. Added a lot more sophistication to the bill, and certainly I think it has given us a much more pragmatic, defendable bill that government just can't simply say this is a Greens bill, and they can't simply say this is pie in the sky when you've got pretty well every climate expert in this state saying it's doable, and it's doable now, and it's pragmatic, it just requires vision. I think actually gives it a real impetus.
Can you say a little bit now about how you are relating to crossbenchers, the government, the Labor government, and the Liberal opposition? What are the dynamics there for you in persuading them to take up your bill?
Yeah, look, I'm pragmatic enough to know that it's, look, unlikely this bill in this exact form will be taken up by government. And look, one of the things we'll be debating is a further motion that actually talks about government introducing their own bill, which, in my view, should have a 2030 target, should have a net zero target, and also renewable energy targets as well, and a climate expert panel. I mean, I think they're the vital ingredients. And I've been taking very much a view of being collaborative, communicating with people on all sides of the chambers, that what I'm trying to do with this is reach out, knowing I am I can't by myself get anything done through the parliament. It's going to require collaboration. And in doing so, I've got to be credible. And that was actually why I've relied very heavily on this expert panel, because without being having a credible, doable outcome here, then obviously it's not going to get up. But I think the argument for climate action is overwhelming. It's overwhelming in an environmental sense now. It's overwhelming in a moral sense. We can't not act. But it's also overwhelming in an economic sense, is that this is an opportunity that we're going to lose if we don't act. And I think those three things together, I hope, will see a real turn in what has been a lot of inaction lately to some really ambitious action in coming years.
Brad Pettit, when you think of what climate change could mean for Western Australia, what are some of the impacts that you're personally concerned about from your reading of the scientific literature and what the advisers are saying?
We have seen an extraordinary drying of our climate over the last four decades. In fact, I think the winter we just had was the winters that I remember as a child in Perth, more and more rare. It was nice to have a wet winter. So that drying of the climate and the impacts that has on species, on our trees, on our bird life, I think, is pretty stark. But there's also some really other depressing kind of things to think about. I've been the mayor of Fremantle for a long time, and the West End, which is the most intact Victorian port city in the world, is parts of it are 90 centimetres, a metre above sea level. The likely changes to sea level rise over this century will see large parts of that potentially flooded on a regular basis. These are buildings that are over 100 years old that may not get to be another. Unless we're going to actually do these giant walls around our city, then all of a sudden that connection between the West End and the ocean. And so and some of the modelling all the way up the Swan River is extraordinary. And I was just reading today an ABC report that some of the worst coral bleaching in the state is happening here in Western Australia. We are not immune from this. In fact, we are being impacted by it. Our farmers are being impacted by it. But it's in these places where I think there is really good reason for us to acknowledge it and get in front of it and be part of the solution. When you're one of the greatest impacted, when you're one of the greatest contributors, but when you also have some of the most to gain from the transition, I don't see how you cannot not act.
Thanks to Greens MLC, Brad Pettit and Adrian Glamorgan for this story. I'm Elizabeth Poe. Join us next week when we will be bringing you a story about business leaders taking the initiative way ahead of the major parties on climate action. Catch you then, when there'll be ever more to explore on Understory, Radio for the Planet.